habit we'll be referring to it in the sheet, so again and again you'll know what we're talking about. It's called the Jethro principle. The Jethro principle. And this is the whole heart and the birth of cell groups or small groups or TLC, tender loving care groups, call them what you would. From verse 13, Exodus 18:13, it came to pass on the morrow or the next day that Moses sat to judge the people. And the people stood by Moses from morning till evening. And when Moses, his father-in-law, saw all that he did to the people, he said, "What is this thing you're doing to the people? Why do you sit alone and all the people come to you from morning till night?" And Moses said to his father-in-law, "Because the people come to me to inquire of God, to hear the mind of God in matters they want answers to. When they have a matter, they come to me, and I judge between one and the other, and I make them know the statutes of God and his laws." And Moses, his father-in-law, said to him, "The thing that you do is not good." Yeah, Moses had a teachable spirit. He was the prophet of God, and he listened to his father. "The thing you're doing, Moses, this is no good. You will surely wear away. You will wear yourself out. You will burn out. Both you and this people with you, for this thing is too heavy for you, for you are not able to do it yourself alone. Hearken now to my voice. I will give you counsel. God will be with you. For you be thou for the people to Godward, that thou mayest bring the causes unto God, and thou shalt teach them ordinances." And he goes on, he says, you can teach them. However, this is the way you do it. Let's just skip down. 21. "Moreover, you shall provide out of all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place such able men over the people to be rulers over thousands and over hundreds and over fifties and over tens." And it starts with the tens going on up. That's what we're dealing with today. "And let them judge, and if it be a matter too great," verse 22, "then they can come to you. But the small matters, let them judge, and it will be easier for yourself that these other leaders may bear the burden with you. And if you do this thing, you know, all the people shall go to their place in peace." Verse 24, "So Moses hearkened to the voice of his father-in-law, did all that Jethro said, and Moses chose able men out of Israel, made them heads over the people, rulers of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, of tens. And they judged the people at all seasons. The hard cases only they brought to Moses, but every small matter they judged themselves." And that's really the heart of it. Father, thank you for your word, and thank you for what I believe you've already started in Pastor Ken Riggle's work, heart, Ken Francis. And that we believe that you're going to cause this to grow and to multiply and to explode in this church for the expansion of your kingdom here in this city of Mackay, in Jesus' name. Amen. Let's look at on page one in your contents there. There's seven chapters of the cover, and if we'll be able to go through this. Some pages just take a few seconds. How to break out of growth-restricted boxes with 2020 vision. If you're wondering what we mean by 2020 vision, you know when you go for an eye test, while I'm doing that, can somebody quick turn to Acts 20:20? That's where it comes from. And that's what we call the spiritual 20:20 vision. You go for an eye test, and if you can see the smallest letters from the right distance, then you've got 20:20 vision. You've got what we call perfect eyesight. I don't have 20:20 physical vision, but... somebody got Acts 20:20? Go ahead, just buzz it out loud enough for the others to hear. Paul's writing, he says, Luke's writing, the gospel writer. Paul is talking and saying, you know, I've not hesitated to teach you both publicly and from house to house. This is not some 20th century latest fad. This is straight from the New Testament church in the Gospel of Acts, right after the Holy Ghost had been poured out, and there was a thriving home or small cell group ministry. Paul says that. He said, I taught you both publicly, as now here, and house to house. So just in case, to take care of any of that. So number one is how to break out of growth restrictive boxes with 2020 vision. By 2020 vision, we mean both celebrations together as a corporate body on Sundays and house to house ministry and fellowship. Number two, chapter two, how to create a caring organization for growth by groups. Three, how to make subgroups work. How to recruit, equip, and train lay pastors in small group ministry. In this manual, you would be considered lay pastors. By that we mean unsalaried by the church, but yet actively involved in ministry, lay pastors. Chapter 5, how to be a leader who builds leaders and builds groups. 6, how to cause your groups to multiply to explosive church growth. And 7, how to implement the 2020 vision small group system into any church. Breaking out of the growth restrictive boxes. Next page. Power of vision. Is that page one in your books? The power of vision, the growth restrictive boxes themselves. Point three, understand the Jethro principle. We already read the text to you, so you have an idea what we're talking about now. Avoid burnout. It goes hand in hand. Jethro told Moses that. Replace people dissatisfaction with satisfaction. People often are dissatisfied with the church because they find they don't have a place. They want to know, what's my place in this body? So how to replace that dissatisfaction with satisfaction. And we will, much of this material is from a church of about 6,000 people in northwestern, in the state of Oregon. And we ourselves, my wife and I, come from a church on the east coast, Pennsylvania, about 2,000 people. So we will share with you, both from our personal experience from our home church and from this other church we've studied from, when we say learn from one of America's most effective meta-church models. Meta comes from the word metamorphosis. You know, the caterpillar metamorphoses into a cocoon and then into a butterfly. That's simply meaning change, ever expanding, constantly changing and growing. The problem with humans is many of us don't like change. We get established. That's like a cart which gets stuck in a rut. Established. We need to keep moving. The wind of the Spirit of God is continually moving. Jesus talked about that in John 3:7 to Nicodemus. So meta-church, constantly changing. Now this might be a negative connotation in your mind, but in a Christian context, evolving. It was an unheard of phenomenon decades ago, even in the 60s, to hear of churches, 6,000, 10,000, 15,000 people, 650,000 people in Korea. But this, God's, you know, Jesus is coming back for a bride that's without spot or wrinkle. It's changing, it's growing. Do we want to be part of that expanding vision, of that growing church, of this dynamic church of Jesus Christ? So, that's what we mean by meta-church models. Create multiple points of entry into your church, not just the Sunday morning. If that's the only way you're going to grow, it's going to take a long time to grow. In fact, you might lose more by the back door than come in the front door. So how do we create multiple points of entry to cell groups? Catch the 2020 vision. Use small groups to meet the deepest needs of your people and unlock the door to reach the unchurched. And here we will look at what is vision, page 2. The power of vision. What is a vision? A vision is the ability or God-given gift to see those things which are not but are becoming reality. And the Bible describes vision in Hebrews 11:1. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Or in other words, faith is vision, and vision is seeing it long before it is, or before it comes to pass. And we know Proverbs 29:18 says, where there is no vision, the people perish. And let's just, you know what the opposite of that verse would be? Where there's no vision, the people perish. Where there is a vision, the people flourish. Where there is a vision, the people flourish. Let's look at these 12 group restrictive boxes. Box number one, and you may write inside the box each little description there. These are things that keep us from growing. Number one is small thinking. You might hear people say, oh, well, we're just a small country church of 60 people in a town of 60,000. 60 people in a town of 60,000? That's small thinking. And some people are content. Well, I'm quite happy. This is my family. Box number two, Sunday only. This will keep us from growing. If we have a Sunday only mentality, you know, when you have cell groups, more people ought to be getting ministered during the week in cell groups than just those getting ministered to on Sunday. So another growth restrictive box is the Sunday only mentality. Number three is one single service in the week. Oh no, we can't have Sunday evening service, you know, people need to have time to go home and watch television with their family, and you know, Wednesday evening is too much, we live in a Western society, it's too busy, you know, we don't have time to do the washing stuff. Just one single service. Use your facility as well. What's the point in having this facility if it's just for one service in the week? Four. Church building. In other words, ministry only takes place in this place, not outside of here. And that's negative, that's wrong thinking too, restricting growth. When you have cell groups, small groups, what do you call them here? I'll try and use that term. Home church. When you have home churches functioning actively, then you have people ministering to people all the time, calling up on the phone, calling their lay leaders, their home church leaders, etc. It's much more than just inside a building. Box number 5, Sunday school only. Well, their mentality is, well, small group to me is, well, we have church, but my small group or home church is Sunday school. It's not just that, it's far more than that. Sunday school is still more a teaching environment, isn't it, when you consider adults? They come and teach a lesson. But we're talking about, we'll get to the nuts and bolts. So that's another growth restrictive mentality. Well, Sunday school, church and Sunday school, that's enough for me. Box number 6. All groups the same night. And that's no good. You don't have to have, you know, as pastors and leaders in charge, we don't have to say, well, all home churches are going to meet on the same night of the week. It doesn't work. Some people, they just can't make that particular night. In fact, a pastor was mentioning to me how they swapped the prayer meeting from Tuesday night to Friday night. That's flexibility already. He's doing the right things. It suits more people. It suits, you know, for where you're at. You don't have to worry about getting up early for work on Saturday morning, you know, but you have to on Wednesday morning if you had it on Tuesday night. That's fine. Most COC churches have their prayer meeting on Tuesday night, but you don't have to be a clone, you know. We can be in the same spirit, but not clones. Would be a boring place. So, you don't have to have all the groups the same night. Some people, it just doesn't work. In fact, we know that you can have a ladies' cell group during the daytime, in a week. That's about the best time to have them. Box number 7, pastors in control of all ministry. Well, yes, the pastor needs to be in charge, but he doesn't have to be in control of every single meeting. He releases that responsibility to others on staff who then oversee those who are home church leaders, and they are in charge of those people. We've got to trust them, release them. But then it's the responsibility of you leaders to be submitted in your hearts to the leadership. If we're not submitted, then it's hard for them to trust us. It's a two-way street, you see. So encourage lay people to participate, because the pastor can't do it all. Moses had a problem on his hands. Box number 8, the board. In some churches, this is a major thing. Board members, really, they have the pastor like a puppet on a string. Some churches. The board controls daily details and all decision-making. You know, let those who have knowledge in certain areas run with that portfolio. In some churches, perhaps the best person to have in charge of your finance committee might be a successful spirit-filled businessman instead of any of your board people. Because that guy's really proven himself in that area. So it doesn't have to be the board for this and the board for everything. Box number 9. Growth restrictive box is where you have a superstar pastor. He's doing everything. Calling all the shots, running the whole show. Superstar pastor. We ought never to get into an indispensable mentality. Get our lay people and pastors to share ministry. Give it away. Give the ministry away to them. Box 10. Everything's dumped on the assistant pastor. That's another, you know, and that's all I've heard it said, the assistant pastor better do everything the senior pastor doesn't like to do or doesn't want to do. But again, we can't just dump everything on the assistant pastor. He's just one man or one couple. Pick someone who can't do what you can do as the pastor. We think of that with spouses, don't we? They are complementary. So in ministry, select. God will lead you to people who have complementary giftings that can complement your ministry gifts. And somebody who, the assistant pastor ideally ought to be a multi-talented person, somebody who's really submitted and loyal to the senior pastor and their vision. Number 11. Comfort zone. Listen to this. 90% of churches are the same today as they were 25 years ago. 90% of churches are the same today as they were 25 years ago. That goes, this comfort zone goes right along with that small mentality, box number 1. We're fine. Us 4 no more. You know, 60 of us, country town, whatever you want to call it. You can find all sorts of reasons. Or everybody's related to everybody else by, you know, by the last 25 years in that church. Don't come and rattle our cage. And then box number 12, we never did it that way before. When you're talking about home churches, we never did it that way before. That's not what we're accustomed to. We don't like change. Leave us the way we are, stuck in the mud, stuck in a rut. We never did it that way before. It's like, you catch a fish, it doesn't fit your frying pan. It's too big for your frying pan, so you throw the fish out. No! Get a bigger frying pan, my friend! Where's the vision? So that's increased. Okay, page 5. 3, learning the Jethro principle, and I just read that, so we won't have to read it right now. Learning the Jethro principle that will help you accomplish more in less time. Now, there are three potential problems with the Jethro principle. I just read the text that caused the Jethro principle to be implemented. And Jethro pointed this out to Moses. Number one, he said, you're going to wear out, the King James says, and we call it burnout. In verse 18, we read that, burnout. That's the fallacy of thinking that the longer hours, the longer the pastor works, the better the pastor is, the better pastor he is. That's not true. Then you break. Just this morning he mentioned how, I'm not sure, in June or somewhere there, they're looking at taking a vacation. They need that break. But we think, oh no, our pastor's great. I mean, he's always there. It barely rings twice and he picks up the phone. He's there at the drop of a hat. Jump faster. That's a fallacy. That can lead to burnout. The fallacy of thinking that the longer the pastor works, the better the pastor he is. Not true. Number two, dissatisfaction. There are always two elements of satisfaction and dissatisfaction. I've already mentioned earlier, some people are not satisfied when they come to a church. They want to find their place. They want to get actively involved. And if we don't institute and establish and propagate and multiply home church cells, groups, these people are going to get dissatisfied. Let's face it, most people in church, all they're going to see is the neck of the person in front of you. Not everybody's going to have the opportunity to have a pulpit ministry or a worship ministry up front. But in a cell group, everybody, there's a place for everybody. In fact, I'll tell you, this is true of our lives. I am today personally in ministry because when our assistant pastor in Pennsylvania approached me after school, I was a high school teacher in a Christian school, he said, would you and Patrick be willing to lead this one home cell that is in your suburb? The leaders just decided to leave it. And I said, yeah. That, I'm telling you, as God is my witness, was the beginning of God himself launching Patsy and myself into full-time ministry. Just one word, yes. We were not too proud. And I came from being an assistant pastor in India. I was thinking, can't they see? Hasn't my reputation gone before me? Are they deaf, dumb, blind? I mean, I told them that our church grew from 12 to 250 in a pagan country. And I felt like a muzzled ox. You're probably thinking, these blokes just barely 2 years, but don't they know? I've been involved in ministry. I left that town or that city and I had pioneered such and such a work. Just say yes. Start with the home church. And a man's gift, a woman's gift, will make room for you. You're faithful in the little things, God will make you responsible over much. Here's an encouraging testimony for you. Three young men, Bill Kreider, Don Bamberger, and Andrew Taylor. Same church, all teachers in the same Christian school, sitting at faculty devotions in the morning, each one sharing that, man, I'd love to be in ministry. I mean, not blowing it for everybody to hear, but the three of us. In our hearts, we really desire to be in full-time ministry, if you know what I mean by full-time. And each of us were approached by the same assistant pastor, Don Neff, to be our leaders. Don Bamberger said, no, not yet. Bill Kreider said, no, not yet. Andrew Taylor said, yes. Today, both those families, Bill Kreider's family and Don Bamberger's family, are personally supporting our ministry every month. They're still not in ministry, we are. And we're still good friends. They were not prepared to open their homes and to be simple, to accept this, the first starting step of spiritual responsibility as lay leaders or home church leaders. Only last month I got the news that Don Bamberger and family have now accepted to become home church leaders. And this incident happened in 1987. 1995, January, Don Bamberger decided to start as a home church leader. If he had done it when I said yes, who knows what he could have been doing today. That's the true testimony of our lives. So, dissatisfaction and satisfaction, those are the two elements we have, and how do we handle the dissatisfaction in the church? Home church groups, people have opportunities to share their gifts in that area. Number three, an unhealthy reliance on the pastor. We saw in the Jethro principle, unhealthy reliance on Moses. In our case, it would be the pastor. If he's got to do everything, if he's got to run all the shows and all the departments, there's a problem. There's going to be burnout, breakdown, dissatisfaction. Release them in ministry. So there's no unhealthy reliance on the leader or the pastor. You grow when you begin to share ministry. Moses was willing to listen to his father-in-law and implement that. What did Moses' father-in-law, Jethro, advise him to do? Summarize it in one word. Decentralize. Decentralize. Another synonym could be delegate. Delegate. Give it away. I know nobody likes to do that. Give it away. But the more you give in the spiritual realm, the more comes back to you. Decentralize. The fact that Moses took his father-in-law's advice and put it into practice, what does this tell us about Moses? This is not necessarily one of the answers here, but one of mine would be, right off the top, teachable spirit. I tell you, if we would just be teachable. Oh, my brother, my sister. Pastors are yearning and seeking for people, not in your abilities and your talents and your degrees and your ministry experience, but a teachable heart. The last time you received correction from them, how did you handle it? Were you thinking about quitting? Going to another church? Or did you actually turn around and say, Pastor, thank you so much for sharing that. I was blind to that. That was a blind spot in my life. It doesn't matter who you are or what your experience is in ministry. Thank you for sharing that. I receive that. Use those words. Thank you for sharing that. I receive that. I want to implement those changes right away. And if you find in a week or two that I still haven't made some of those changes, please come back to me a second time. That's an example of a teachable spirit. So six things that Moses did. Number one, he enlisted. Remember, there were to be rulers over captains over thousands, hundreds, and tens. So he enlisted men, and he trained them, gave them instructions. Three, he organized them, organized the whole nation of Israel, really, tribe by group, down to tens. And four, he set up a chain of command. Let's back up to one in case I went too fast. He enlisted, he trained, number three, he organized, four, he set up a chain of command, and that's important. Five, he delegated. When do you delegate? Here's a quick rule of thumb. If somebody else can do a particular job 80% better than you, give it to them. Don't hang on to it. If somebody else can do a particular job at least 80% better than you, hand it over, give it away. And number six, Moses balanced his life. That brought a tremendous balance into his life. He was not going to burn out or wear out or rust out. You see the phrase there, people learn ministry by doing. There's no better way, no better teacher than experience. What did Moses get from the people? What did Moses get the people to do that is equal to what we have got to get people to do? He got the people to take ownership. When we delegate responsibility and spiritual authority in a home church setting, they begin to take ownership. Now, as a lay leader, as a home church pastor here, leader, home church leader, you're going to say, this is my group. I lead a group in, West Mackay. Now, it's not for us to run away with the mental set that I'm the pastor of this little mini church. No, I lead a group in West Mackay. Which part of which church is sponsored by CSC? You'll hear the word sponsored here, which simply means it's under the spiritual covering of. It's not some maverick group out there with a bunch of flakes just coming together. We'll talk about flakes later on in this. But what did Moses get the people to do that we need to get them to do? To take ownership. This is my church. This is my cell group. So-and-so is, Alan is my leader in the home church setting. True. But then Alan is in turn submitted to. Here's just a quick thought that came from Dr. Cho. We were also privileged, my wife and I, to go to Dr. Cho's church in Seoul, Korea, the biggest church in the world. In 1990, at that time there were 650,000 people, and he had about 52,000 home churches. Joe himself stood up and said this. Of my 52,000 home churches, 94% of the home church leaders are women. And if any of you here, including the Westerners, have a problem with that, let me tell you that every one of those women is submitted to my spiritual authority. If you still have a problem, come and talk to me afterwards. But the key was they were submitted. Whether they're women or couples or men, we need to be submitted to the spiritual authority, you know, the senior pastor, in that chain of command. Good results, page 6. What were the good results of Moses during this delegation? For Moses, he was a healthier man. I mean, his whole day was tied up listening to cases. Number 2, results of the new leaders. What would happen? All of a sudden, these guys who were just other guys in Israel were now leaders over tens and hundreds and thousands. So it results in them being used, now this is in a proper sense, not in a negative sense, being used, making them happy and contented. And the results for the people was satisfaction. So Moses is a healthier man, the new leaders are now happy because they're being used, instead of just hanging around wondering what am I going to do with my giftings. And the people are now satisfied because the people themselves, I mean down to the 10 people in the group, their needs were being met more effectively. They didn't have to wait for 3 days, like in sometimes in our medical system, if you need heart surgery, you know, you have to wait, the waiting list. People didn't have to wait for spiritual surgery. They could just go to the leader of 10. 5 reasons why pastors do not sometimes put the Jethro principle into practice. By now you should know what Jethro principle means. Okay. Why? Sometimes, now I can say this confidently in front of your pastor because he's obviously got a heart for it, so it's not really applicable to him. But in churches that don't, here's some reasons why. It's just ignorant. They're not open to new ideas. It's like, no, we've been doing it this way for years. Ignorance. 2, lack of information. You know what the Bible says in, forget, is it Hosea? My people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. Lack of information. 3, insecurities. Many times the pastor is insecure in his own call and is wondering, if I may call these guys home church leaders, a couple of them might rise up and get rid of me because they don't need for me. Insecurities. 4, traditions. I talked about that, getting stuck in a rut. Now, let me say this. Not all traditions are bad. You don't just come into a scene and change everything around. I mean, we only moved to Australia 4 years ago. It would be pretty stupid for me to try to start a move to get rid of Anzac Day. I need to learn the history of the country, you know. Then I get an appreciation and I say, that's good, you need to keep that. And I need to get into it too. Not all traditions are bad, but some traditions, some people are so traditionalist that they change very slowly. That's one problem. And some pastors, this is just stuck in tradition. 5, you have the wrong models. You know, often, what do we know about parenting? What we saw parents do. And sometimes, they didn't model the best parenting. But that's no excuse, as I teach and preach on parenting, because we have more information and knowledge available to us. My dad never heard of Dr. James Dobson and Focus on the Family. We do, and we have that literature. I can't blame my parents for some of the mistakes they made when we are a party to much more knowledge. Okay, so, wrong models. Unfortunately, some pastors and churches have had the wrong models. We need new models, you know, with the 2020 vision as in Acts 2020. Somebody read that, right? Ministered both publicly and from house to house. Both the parts together. And point 4 here. What's the proper role relationship between pastor and people that we are taught in Ephesians 4, 11 to 13? And that talks about, I mean, we could turn to it, but I'll just cover that briefly for you. It talks about the fivefold ministry giftings, apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, teachers. But these giftings are to equip the saints. To equip, I must have called Jeff Fort, there he comes. These giftings are to equip the believers so that they may be perfect in every good work. In other words, to be strong and steadfast. And so now in turn, they can reproduce other leadership. So that's the proper role relationship between the pastor and people. So the pastor equips the leaders, and now the leaders lead the groups and minister effectively to the needs of the people. Leadership development is essential to all church growth. You just can't put anybody in a position of leadership. You are not, those of you sitting here who are leading home church groups, you've been asked, we'll come to how you select them, etc. But you've been asked, I'm sure, not just, you know, out of a lottery. There was prayer, there was observation of your ministry gifts, there was recommendation from others, from the assistants. So it's not a hit and run kind of thing. We're talking leadership development is essential because it's the leaders who are going to effectively lead the sheep. The pastor can't do it all single-handedly. Only what the leader shares in ministry multiplies, and this is important. From the church, from the pulpit, if the senior pastor has got a heart for home cells, for home church groups, that's going to multiply in the hearts of the leaders and the hearts of the people. I've already found out that prayer is in the heart of your pastor. What, 5 mornings a week you have prayer? But let me tell you, if you have about 40, 45 people who said those mornings, that is an incredibly high statistic. Incredibly high. I don't want to give you names, but I know of a church with about 2,000 people where an average of 5 to 7 people come out for prayer 6 to 7 in the mornings, 4 days a week. Then they cut it down to 3 days a week. So you do not maybe fully realize, I think maybe you do, but maybe if you're not fully aware, the solid foundation you're laying in the Spirit. You've got to be ready with your running shoes on when the Holy Ghost starts to reward you for the fruit of that soaking prayer you've been putting in the Spirit. That's tremendous. So only what the leader shares in ministry multiplies. How much time in your ministry do you spend giving the ministry away, sharing it with others? What is the 2020 vision? We already read it. Here it is again. Let's read it. Here's God's own master plan for church growth in your church. You know, Paul says, that I have not hesitated to preach anything that wouldn't be helpful to you, but I've taught you both publicly and from house to house. So, on the next page, celebration. That's public. When you come together on Sunday morning, Sunday night, whenever you have a corporate meeting, that's a celebration. That's publicly. And from house to house is cell groups or home church groups. Look at the early church. If somebody could quick read Acts 2, 41, 40, 41, 42, specifically. In fact, these verses, the Jethro principle in Exodus 18, Acts 20:20, and Acts 2, if you cover these three, that really has the heart of the whole home churches. Acts 2:40 says this, from 41, "Then they that gladly received his word were baptized, and the same day were added unto them about 3,000 souls." That's the first church being born on the day of Pentecost. Now watch verse 42. "And they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine and fellowship, and in breaking of bread and prayers." Verse 46. "And they continuing daily with one accord in the temple," and, so they continuing with one accord in the temple celebration, corporate meetings, "and breaking bread from house to house, to eat their meat with gladness and singleness of heart." So there was a balanced ministry outreach in the early church 2,000 years ago. They had the corporate celebration, the coming together in the temple, and breaking of bread from house to house, ministering in homes, home church groups. And because of that, verse 47, the end of the chapter says, "And they're praising God, having favor with all the people, and the Lord added to the church daily such as should be saved." There's no way the Lord can add daily to the church if you only come together at corporate celebration times. Because that's only two times or three times in a week. Daily means every day. And if you have home churches operating and ministering throughout the week, every single day of the week, different ones at different times of the day, for ladies groups, special groups, you know, nurture groups, etc., then people are being ministered and being added to the church daily. So you have celebration, cell groups, and we just saw a look at the early church. Now, what part did small groups play in the early church? We've already just covered that. An integral part. That gave the balance. You had the corporate celebration, the home church celebration. They were an integral part. It was just part of the whole worship and fellowship experience. How do we reach people for Christ today? That's a question we need to ask ourselves. Let's look at this. We talked earlier about creating multiple points of entry. Look at the diagram here on page 7. You've got the inner circle, those who are pillars of the church, the good old-fashioned term. They ain't going, this is their church, they've tied here for donkey's years, they ain't going anywhere. Inner church circle, then you've got the leadership, of course, and there, the senior pastor and the assistant, etc., other elders. And you've got various points of entry. We need to create multiple points of entry. Just imagine each of those lines cutting into the outer circle as one home church. In fact, this is probably more where you are right now as a church. How many home church cells do you have? 12. So imagine if there were 12 lines over there. Okay, this is a picture of where COC Mackay is at. And you see the one thick line, the point of entry. What we need to do is, through these home cells, people are being ministered to throughout the week, at different times of the week, different days of the week, in different homes.
How do you create a point of entry? In your home church, find a need and meet it. Find a need and meet it. Find a hurt and heal it. Find a need and meet it. You create a point of entry. Find a hurt and heal it. Page 8, three doors that you need to pay attention to. The front door, two, the side door, and three, the back door. I'm talking about inner church. The front door is your main service celebration, like Sunday morning. People can come to the front door, but they leave to the back door. Your side door is your during the week services, such as your Friday night prayer meeting, such as maybe you have a midweek Bible study, Wednesday, whatever. No, that's your side door to draw some people. And the back door, the only way, you've heard of some churches have been called the church of the revolving door. People just come in and go out. Come by the front door, by the back door. So how do you close that back door? The most effective proven way to close the back door is to have home church. That's what's going to plug that back door. It's my personal belief or conviction that nobody should, who comes into church this Sunday morning and night for the first time as a visitor. I mean, just take Sunday morning. I guess you would have a time where you say, there are any visitors, just raise your hands or give your visitors card, etc. That nobody who comes in as a visitor on Sunday morning should go home after that service without somebody else, at least in leadership. And if you're a home church leader, that's the perfect opportunity. You should be looking for this hand. That the new person should not go home without having been invited to your home for lunch that very afternoon. Now, if they're busy because they're pre-scheduled, that's fine. Get another day. People come to church and receive the ministry, they still may not come back. But if they come to church and find a friend, they're going to stay. As a home church leader, one time I remember going to my assistant pastor and said, in addition to all of the responsibilities we have, I would also like to be an altar counselor. It's one of the few times I went and said, I'd like to be there. You know, but they're looking. I knew that they needed people to be faithful, who were faithful, whom they can entrust that with. And I told him my motive. I said, I want to be an altar counselor. I mean, I was so filled with wanting this cell group to grow and to explode and to multiply, because every time you bring new life into it, that brings new blood. People are excited. It's not a stagnant pool or an ingrown toenail. I said, I want to be an elder counselor, because that's the new people, you know, who just got saved, gave the house to the Lord. So that as soon as they're done, I'm the one who's counseled them, boom, come to my home group, home church. That was part of my motive. I mean, because it wasn't like I had met the person on the street and brought them to Christ. They had come anyway as a visitor, and somebody was going to lead them to the Lord, some elder counselor. I said, why not me seize that opportunity? Because we had a place to then get them ministered from that point. So that's something you might want to consider. Not look at it as a chore, oh well, then I'll be the last to leave the church after the service is over. So the only way to plug that back door is by getting people into small groups, home church groups. What a meta church model looks like, and I've already covered the word meta, meaning changing, metamorphosis. We want to be open. Lord, however you want this church to develop, you do it, we're with you. A new paradigm. Paradigm basically means a model. The new model in this 20th century as we embark on the 21st, should the Lord tarry. And you have a diagram down here. The three main parts of the expandable organization of the metachurch that begin with C. Number one is celebration. So that outer circle covers, encompasses everybody that comes in, all in Sunday on a Sunday morning, Sunday night. Celebration. Number two, we will call, it already says that district, which really is a better way to word it, but for the sake of the sea, is congregation, which really would cover like a geographical area. This is a good place to explain it. You've got North Mackay over the Pioneer River and South Mackay. Some people just have a problem crossing the bridge, I'm telling you. It's like a block. So you've got geographical areas, congregations, groups. And inside the medium circles and the tiny circles, each of them represents one cell. One home church. It's a celebration, congregation, cell, or you call it a home church. Page 9. Compare the traditional model to the metachurch model. The traditional model, the old-fashioned model, is all pastor-centered, like Moses was doing all the work, pastor-centered. The metachurch model, point one, is we're sharing ministry together. Sharing ministry together. So pastor-centered, the sharing ministry together. Number two, the traditional model is Sunday service-centered. Or we could say celebration-centered, only when you come together at corporate times. Sunday service or celebration-centered. But the meta-church model is seven-day-a-week church. That's my, when I talk with Jehovah's Witness, I say, oh, you're a JW, praise God, I'm a JW too. You're a Jehovah's Witness, I'm a Jesus Witness. Acts 1:8. Jesus said, you'll be witnesses unto me. Talk to a seven-day Adventist. You're a seven-day Adventist. God bless you, brother. I'm an everyday Adventist. You only hang up on the Sabbath. I talk about Jesus all the time, mate. No problem. So, seven-day-a-week church. We're not seventh-day Adventists. Hey, just Sunday celebration. Seven-day-a-week church. Number three, traditional model is building-centered. All happens around the auditorium. Building-centered. The meta-church model is people-centered. In your homes, on the telephones, you're ministering to people. People-centered. Number four, traditional model is organized for control. Now you know why many churches are stuck in their truck. They won't go anywhere. Their pastors are insecure. So I'm telling you, praise God for your pastor. He's got a vision. Let's go. I want God to explode in this church. Whereas the meta-church model is organized for outreach. There's a heart for people. God save His people. We have been praying. The harvest is ready. We're here to thrust in the sickle. And you, my friends, the home church leaders, are part of the sickle in the hand of the Master. Let Him thrust you in and reap that harvest in Mackay. Five, traditional model. Pastor and staff only are to do the ministry. You know, they're paid to do it. So only the pastor and staff. And you have a problem here, call the pastor. This is his card. This is his phone number. Meta church model. The pastor and staff equip lay people in ministry. In other words, you really are the ones to do that ministry. The pastor and staff equip their job. Yes, they're paid to, and they spend their time equipping you. Pastor and staff equip lay people in ministry, but they have a responsibility while they model ministry themselves. They model it, and they equip lay leaders, and you then minister to people. Number six, traditional model is all centralization. Centralization. Meta-church model, this is what Moses did from the Jethro principle. What was it? Decentralization. And add one more there, number seven. Traditional model tends to be program-driven. Haven't we heard that before? The church has so many projects and programs. But the meta-church model needs to be ministry-driven. Is our heart to truly minister to the needs of the people that God is bringing to us. The meta-church model has a potential to break through every barrier at every level of church growth. A church has walls only to keep out the wind and the rain, not people. Page 10. How to create an organization for people, caring, and growth by groups. Let's look at, these are just the titles on the left. Let's go straight to page 11, which is the first point, and my own experience with small groups. Now here I want to share with you briefly my personal experience with small groups. I'm not sure how long you've been there. You may have some of your own thoughts. Most or all people get opportunities to share briefly in a small group. If you are averaging about 10 to 12 people in a small, in a home church, most everybody there on any given night when you get together has an opportunity to share what's in their heart. Whether it's just to ask for prayer or just to share something that's been quickened with them. That's a tremendous advantage about small groups. Number two, under point one there, first paragraph. Hidden giftings come to light. As a home church leader, you will be amazed. Every person's got a story to tell. You may have no idea that one lady sitting there has an absolutely fantastic voice. That one bloke sitting there is incredibly gifted on the keyboard or piano. Hidden giftings come to life. You'll never find that out almost on a Sunday morning. Three, I just said everyone has a story to tell. You'd be shocked and sometimes blessed out of your socks by the testimony of some of those people. One time I remember for a season when we were leading a cell group, I chose the different couples. I said, this week all I want you to do is just share your testimony, how you came to know Christ. Don't dwell too much on the negative past, but how you came to know Christ. And it's amazing the things God had done in their life. And through that, you find out what their giftings are. Four, which is my experience, quality fellowship takes place. way better than you could have had on a Sunday morning. In fact, Sunday morning they can't wait, they're done, they just rush off home, they've hardly visited. Place, there's a networking and a bond. Between the people in your small group. Five, it builds relationships. That's what the body's all about. Just a quick thought then, to encourage you and to spur you on at home churches. You know, you've heard it said that you're world, you can't take anything with you to heaven, and that's true. You can't take your house or your bank balance or your car. But there's one thing that you will take to heaven whether you like it or not, and that's our relationships. I will always know Pastors Ken and Francis throughout all of eternity. I know them here. I mean, he's still going to be Ken Wigglesworth in heaven, you know. Well, the Lord may give him a new name, but I'll know him after the Spirit. You know what I'm talking about? We will have our relationships. They're the only thing that we can take to heaven with us. How important it ought to be that we maintain these relationships at all costs, do all possible to keep them in a state of good repair. So, build relationships. Number six, needs are made known in a small home church, and they get met. And by needs, I mean not just spiritual needs. Sure, we pray for people, but physical needs. You know, that same, the three guys that I talked about, the first two said, no, we won't lead the cell group, and I said, we would. When we were leading the cell group, I remember Donald Bamberger. It doesn't matter, because you probably may never meet him in your life. They had such a hard time that their clothes washer and stuff broke down. And our home church got together $350 from the other members of that home church, just blessed them with that gift, to get another one. I said, listen, if you want to get a used washer and dryer and bank the rest because you've got so many children, that's fine. But this is for that purpose, and just to bless you guys. So not just praying, that's fine, but also physical needs can get met. You don't have to always come to the church leadership and say, how much do you have in this account for this person? Within this home church cell group, this thing needs to get met. And finally, this might surprise you. You call it supper time, you know, when you have a snack at the end. I call it snack time after the home church. If you don't, please do start it. I personally believe that the snack time is the most spiritual part of your home church. Even in a home church setting of 10 to 12 people, there will be some people who are as quiet as a mouse. You have to pry their jaws open to get them to talk. They'll come faithfully, but they won't talk. But when you have your snack time, they'll go to the one or the two persons they get on with really well and spill the beans and share their heart. I believe personally and from our experience that your supper time, what we call snack time, is the most spiritual part of your meeting. By the way, supper in America is what we call tea, the main meal. So the first time we went to a home church in Australia and they got done, the leader asked somebody to pray for the supper they're going to have. I thought, oh, that's cool. They got a big meal coming up. And all they got was some cookies and tea and coffee. And, oh, man, that's a letdown. Well, it's just a terminology. We call it snacks and you call it supper. But I believe that the snack time is many times the most spiritual part of the meeting. Organize that. Yeah, we used to delegate one. Well, I might be. If I have time, I'll come to that later on. Okay? In this small group. 5 reasons why your church needs a small group system. 1, it provides multiple points of entry into your church. 2, it's very effective evangelism or outreach. Most people are much more comfortable with 10 or 12 people than in a church with 150, 200. It's the only way to care, or you may insert, to properly care, to fully care, to really care for the people. 4, it accelerates spiritual growth within the people, because throughout the week they have opportunities to share. When they're praying, they may come up with a word of knowledge. You know, they may have a 5-minute teaching or something. It accelerates spiritual growth within the people. 5, it properly shifts the work of the church to the people and fulfills Ephesians 4, 11 to 16. And of course, you can read that afterwards. Ephesians 4, 11 to 16, to equip the church so that they can effectively minister to the people. By now, even if we stop the seminar now, you should be convinced, I trust, that we really need home churches. It's going to meet tremendous needs. People are going to get excited. They're going to get involved. They don't have to be wondering, what's my place in the body? No church with more than 50 members can be effective in pastoral care without enlisting and enabling lay people to do the work of pastoral care in a home church setting. Participation and ownership by the people is the key to a successful church. 6 needs people have today, according to Gallup poll report. 1, this is just people in general. 6 needs. 1 is to believe that life is meaningful and has purpose. Didn't you ever ask yourself that question as a teenager? What am I doing here? Why was I born? To believe that life is meaningful. 2, to have a sense of community. We know that nobody is an island to themselves. To have a sense of community, belonging, somebody there cares if I'm down and out. 3, to be appreciated and respected. Not to be mocked. To be appreciated and respected. 4, to be listened to. Listened to and heard. Some people, and some of us leaders, I caution us, especially with leaders, preachers and teachers, it's a major problem. We can go yak, yak, yakety, yak, 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 yakety, yak, and nobody has an opportunity to give any input from their hearts, and this was supposed to be a home church group. We just ran the whole show from start to finish. We'll touch more on this later. That's not what a home church is designed to be. In the case of, oh great, I want to be a home church leader, now I'll pop all my teaching into these people, and then I can take them away from the church eventually. That may not be a motive, but if you're there just to yak from start to finish, those people, it's nothing different than a small Sunday morning church. That's not the design of a home church group. Unless a senior pastor directs you to do that, I'm sure it's not as hard. To be listened to and heard. And 5, and there's a slight misprint there, to feel that one is growing in faith. To feel. There's a need in people's hearts. I want to feel that I'm growing in God, not just stagnating or going backwards, backwards. 6, to have practical help in developing mature faith. Next paragraph. 3 basic types of small group systems. An appendage. That's where lay people have started small groups and they just go on. You know, somebody just, suppose the pastor didn't even have a heart for home church groups. Somebody starts one and they just go on in their house. You know, they have different sundry people coming in. 2, incorporated, where you have different departments have their own kind of home cell groups. For example, there are task-oriented groups, there are nurture groups. We'll come to those definitions shortly. But they're just flowing side by side. And that's okay, but they aren't really being integrated. And 3, totally integrated, where small cells, 10 to 12 people, make up the lifeblood of the church. Small cells. But it has to be the senior pastor's vision. Remember that. Must come from the heart. Page 13. To make your small groups a totally integrated system. You know, with that word integrated, if you want integrated cell groups, think of the blood that is circulating in your body right now. It's flowing. You can't just take, you know, one molecule, if I would, for lack of a better scientific term, one molecule of blood, you know, with hemoglobin. You can't isolate that and say, well, you're not going to go down the leg area. It's going to move all through the body, goes to the lungs, gets oxygenated, goes out throughout the body. There's a constant interchange. It's vibrant. It's full of life. It's totally integrated. It's a part of your body. So also these cells are like vibrant home churches, vibrant, full of life. Each one interacting with the other, maybe. Okay. One, you need to make the small groups and vision the heart of the senior pastor. Two, make it the heart of the church leadership. That includes, you know, Jeff, not just the senior pastor. So it's corroborated, reinforced. Three, make small groups a priority in the church's weekly calendar. In other words, on the church bulletin, you know, whatever you have on a Sunday morning, it needs to be listed there. How does a visitor who comes and know if it's not listed there? Even if it means extra money to print an extra half sheet and stick it in there, listing all the names of the people, the leaders, and their home addresses and phone numbers, do it. It's worth it. Four, make small groups a priority in lay ministry. And make small groups a priority with the pastoral staff. Let's go on. Six, why a group of 10? Well, we saw the Jethro principle, Exodus chapter 18. Thousands, hundreds, fifties, tens. Look at point C and I'll backtrack. Researchers suggest that 10 people is about all one person can nurture. Jesus himself nurtured 12 people, 12 disciples. Get this, and he wasn't even married. In other words, he didn't have the other marriage responsibilities to take care of. And neither did he have children. And all he nurtured was 12. He did a great job. And you might say, well, he was Jesus. But nevertheless, he set a model for us. 10 to 12 is a good number for us to nurture, and then we need to think of multiplying. Why a group of 10? A says the flake formula. You know, if you just have all and sundry coming along like an appendage group from different places, somebody might be somebody else from down your street and someone from another church and someone who doesn't even go to church say, well, I don't believe in church. I just have, you know, small. There are some people who believe that. I don't believe in corporate church. I just go to a small group here. Don't ask me if they're tied, where they're tied, what they do with the money anyway. But those, that would be called like a flake group. Somebody described California as a box of muesli cereal. You know, it's the head office, international head office of the gays, you know, San Francisco. All sorts of weird things, Hollywood, all sorts of garbage in there. As a box of muesli cereal. You know why? Because it's full of fruits, nuts, and flakes. And you have an appendage group with all and sundry coming from here and there. Each one's got his own wacko, weird ideas. See, that's not then sponsored under the spiritual authority of the local church. So that's the flake formula. But you have the Jethro principle, which is Exodus 18, leaders of tens, hundreds, and fifties. And I've covered already C, because Jesus himself only had 12. This is a very interesting model here, a diagram. Page 14, signal counts in small groups. Think of your home church group. If you have only two people in the group, you just get two signals. Three people, 9 signals. Four people, 28 signals. Five people, 75 signals. Six people, 186 signals. Till you go to 10 people, you're getting 5,110 signals, and there's no way any one man or man and his wife as leaders or lady as a leader can handle so many signals. What's going to happen is, yes, we can handle 10 people, but we miss about 5,000 of the signals of what they're trying to say. Some of them are longing to say something, they don't get the chance. And we miss it altogether, though we're leaders sitting right there, guiding this whole time together. You know, so, now that's interesting to let us know that 10 is a pretty good size. When you get consistently above 10, 12, 14, 15, it's time to think multiplying. In fact, you should be thinking multiplying when you're 6, so that you're building it up so that when you reach 15, now you're ready to multiply. How many people should you have in a small group? 8 to 12 is fine, an average of 10. When you hit 12 or more consistently, you must multiply. What's the terminology I use? I have never said divide. That's a negative connotation. Always multiply. You never divide. Next page and a half is very interesting, and you can take time over this. All these things happen in small groups. The one another is of the New Testament. Be at peace with one another. Wash one another's feet. Now look at 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Love one another, love one another, love one another. If you count this later on, 14 times in the New Testament the phrase love one another comes. I just told you how we have to buy a washer, a clothes washer for that couple in our home church. That's one way of saying love one another. Of course, there'll be numerous opportunities to pray for people. Love one another. And look at the next page, 16. The last five are also love one another, love one another, love one another. Back up with me again the previous page. What's these few I'm going to pick out? Not everything is hunky-dory in a home church group. I just thought I'd let you know that. Look at number 21. If you keep on biting and devouring each other, you will be destroyed by each other. So you have some people who will backbite even in your home church group. You need to be prepared. Don't quit, but be prepared for it. Verse 22. Let us not become conceited, provoking and envying each other. You can have some conceited characters all puffed up with pride, thinking that they should be the home church leader, not you. And they know how to run it better than you. Jump down to 30. Do not lie to each other. You will have people in your home church who lie to you about circumstances and situations. Plain lie. 31. Bear with each other. You'll have some people, you just have to go in and bear it. Like, man, we just have to tolerate this person for a while, till God does a work in their lives. 32. Forgive whatever grievances you may have against one another. You will have people sitting there who have grievances against one another and even maybe against you. These are just the cautions I'm pulling out. The nice ones are nice. Praise God for them. 34. Admonish one another. There will be times when you as the home church leader are called upon to give admonition in the Lord. Correction. 43. Next page. Do not slander one another. There will be some slander, back talk going on. We need to pour water, quench those fires. 44. Don't grumble against each other. I just picked out the negative ones. Praise God for all the other positive ones, all right? Just a caution, unless you thought it's going to be hunky-dory. Then, learn to use the Jethro principle for organizing the church for the task. And at the bottom there, this church has used the phrase lay pastor. You would say home church. What do you call it? Home church leaders? There you go. So that, when there's a lay pastor, that's what they mean. So one lay pastor equals a group of 8 to 12 people. Then you have a lay pastor leader who is over about 5 lay pastors, which means about 50 people. And then they have district pastors, which cover the geographical area like North Mackay, West Mackay, South Mackay, etc. And all those will come under the senior pastor. That's it. And the next page, you don't have to worry about those numbers there. It's basically the numbers they've used, but they've got so many cells in this church that they've divided them. But at the bottom half of page 17, look at this. Track 2, specialty districts. There's the task. Task groups involve groups with ushers or just parking lot attendants, greeters in the church, all such task-oriented groups. Then you have what they call, we would call singles, they call them positive singles, include all sorts of young adults, singles, widowed groups, separated, and I like this phrase, formerly married. It's very cleverly put, very tactfully put. Separated and formerly married adults. That very cleverly sidestepped the word divorce and any negative connotations that comes in with it. Interesting. Then children's ministry is a separate kind of group. These are specialty groups. Children from nurseries to 6th grade, that's elementary. Also the staff there. Then you have what they call New Life Victorious, or others would call it SAVE, Substance Abuse Victorious. These are like people who come from drug abuse and alcohol backgrounds. And it's important, I feel, for a church to at least pioneer one group of that nature. Alcohol and substance abuse. And that's actually an excellent place to bring total rank outsiders into the body of Christ. So they're coming for help. If they really want to break the habit, they're coming for help from that thing. And then you introduce them to Jesus, and you have fantastic testimony from those people too, believe me. Then you have the youth groups, junior high, senior high, which we would mean by intermediary and secondary school. Creative arts, this includes choirs, orchestras, vocal groups, dramas, all those kind of people. Young adults, this is like outside of college, graduated from college, etc. And for them, you need a lot of activity-oriented things. Don't just take a bunch of fresh college grads and just get them to sit down and teach them all the time. A lot of ministry goes on also when you go on a skiing trip, that's more in America, whatever you do here for fun, you know, what they do. And then restoration. This is interesting. I know our home church has only last year only started a grief recovery group. Quite a few people who've lost a spouse. And most of us have not experienced that. And how do you work through those emotions? So by bringing people who've had that similar experience, they can open up in one another's company because they know the pain. We can only empathize, but they can sympathize. So there's divorce recovery. They've called it here separation survival, grief recovery, cancer support, reconciliation. Vietnam veterans, that's a major thing in America. I think we have some Vietnam vets here too. Blended families, that's an interesting one. That would be quite a challenge to lead that. You know, when you have kids that are yours, mine, and ours? Those we call them blended families. You may be familiar with that phrase. But there's a lot of adjustment to take place. Okay, page 19. Inside look at the development of the metachurch model. And this church particularly ministers to more than 5,000 people. Every successful cell system begins with the first cell group or cell groups, and you have started. You've got so many cell churches. Small group ministry has to be built from the ground up. Model group or groups are the way to begin. You're beyond that stage, which is fine. Praise God for that. Look at the bottom phrase. I'm sure you've heard this. People do not care how much you know until they know how much you care. And home church groups is the most effective way to care for them. Page 20, again, the titles. We'll go on to page 21. What is a small group? Well, pretty much, it's like a little flock or a cell, sheep. And in a sense, you are a shepherd of that small flock that is entrusted to your care. The key sentence I want to bring out on the bottom of the second paragraph over there. It says, the discussion in the small group will be open and free. In other words, not just the home church leader doing all the talking and all the teaching. It needs to be open and free with emphasis on application to daily life. How does this affect you? How does this affect me? How can my life be changed by this? Make sure we have that. Let me make a quick plug. Have any of you heard of the Serendipity Bible? Yeah. Can I just mention it? It's fantastic. Serendipity comes from Sri Lanka in the days when it was called Ceylon. There was a story, a Western story. Three princes from Serendip who went out, and the king refused to just give them the kingdom. He said, you've got to go out and have a life's journey. And they made some amazing discoveries. That's where the word serendipity comes from. Serendipity is like, it's a wow discovery. You know, these princes were cordoned up in the palace. They didn't know what the real world was like. It's like, wow, there's people who are deformed, sitting on the roadside begging for money. I didn't know that it was even, you know, I wasn't ensconced in my palace. But Serendipity Bible, even if you've got the New Testament, on every passage, they break the Bible up into passages, and they've got three lots of questions on each passage. The first lot of questions are just surface questions, and then we have something like dig, or objective questions, which are factual, and then you've got reflection questions. Very simple example. I thought, how can you come up with interesting passage questions on the genealogy of Jesus Christ? Immediately, I threw this question out. Okay, you can come up with good questions on the woman who anointed Jesus' feet with, you know, alabaster ointment. But on the genealogy, this bloke begat so-and-so, begat so-and-so, begat so-and-so. How can you come up? You know what they did? You can read that at the home church. And they got these three bunches of questions. First type, which was a simple type of question. Now, how come there's a couple of women listed in Jesus' genealogy, like Rahab? All of a sudden, that genealogy came alive. Oh, that's right. Yeah, I wonder how come. I mean, she was a harlot, you know. But she saw that these are the children of God, and she sided with the people of God, so she was rewarded. Ruth, people like that. So that's just the easy question. Then the next question. Who was a historian in your family? The next type of question. Who was a historian in your family? This is a home church. People come alive. It's not just, you know, Jacob begat Methuselah, Methuselah begat Enoch begat Jared. Who's the historian? Oh, yeah, my Aunt Cecilia. Man, she used to tell us all about Uncle Aunt and Auntie Sue, and everybody's minds are alert now. Then the reflective question. What heritage would you like to pass on to your children and grandchildren? Now you're really getting to the guts of the people. That's straight. These questions are straight from the Serendipity Bible. If they could make a genealogy come alive, I thought, man, they would do awesome things for the rest of it. But there's a lot of wisdom of God in that, and it's a wonderful tool in case you're a home church leader, and if you are not particularly gifted in the area of teaching, you know, I'm not saying you don't even have to do any preparation. But with virtually no preparation as far as the teaching, you can just take this, open to any passage, and take those questions, and the whole place will come alive. But that's just my recommendation with the Serendipity Bible, or you can just get the New Testament. My senior pastor bought that and gave it to every home church leader in our home church. In other words, if you really have a hard time, I really push for time this week, pull this out. You've got ready-made the home church thing here. Bottom of page 21, lay people do the pastoring by leading groups. This is where the people care takes place, in your home church. Another word for that word care would be nurturing. You're feeding them. You're giving them opportunities for their giftings. B, leaders, that's you people, home church leaders, take on manageable responsibilities. I mean, 10 to 12 is not a big deal. I'm sure you can handle that. Your pastors feel that way or they wouldn't have asked you. C, the leader who convenes a group, meaning and oversees it from beginning to end, as you already know, you call leaders, who is a trained lay pastor. I mean, you're not salaried, you're lay people. So you're a lay pastor, in a sense, a leader. The small group leader, or the home church leader, serves as a, and I like this word, not teacher, but facilitator. You are there drawing out the giftings from the people, encouraging people to share and to participate. Five things you're always looking for in leadership in your home church groups, page 22. Number one, enthusiasm. Now, as a home church leader, you're not to be there saying, great, I'm the home church leader, and this group is going great, we've grown up to 12, we've got 15 people now in just a matter of 2.5 months since I've taken over, and that's great. No, your heart attitude should be, who, God, do you want to raise up as the next potential leader from this group so that when we are ready to multiply, they're in place, they're ready. In fact, that person or that couple that you feel God's raising up to be the next leader in your home church group, you should actually be giving them the opportunity of leading your home church maybe at least once a month or twice a month even, when as the group is developing and maturing. So that when you do the multiplication, they just walk into it. So here are some things you're looking for in leadership. Enthusiasm. Listen to the statement. One enthusiastic flea can drive a dog nuts. Enthusiasm. Two, a clear testimony. That's so important. It comes to character and integrity. Three, dedication. That makes all the difference between having a champ or a chump. Dedication. Four, the party or the couple need to demonstrate a spirit-led life. If they can't even hear God for themselves, how can they be home church leaders? Five, these potential leaders need to be time and needs-free people. Time and needs-free people. I'll explain that in a second. But I don't mean that they need to have all the time on their hands and be unemployed. What I mean is they are able to give a percentage of their time in the week to nurturing people in their home church. And needs free. If you yourself are constantly in need and ringing the pastor and his wife for help to pray for you for this, for that, and the other, how can you be a successful home church leader if you yourself are carrying a whole pack of needs that need to be met? So it needs to be somebody who really knows who they are in Christ, who has a proper degree of confidence, who has a certain level of spiritual maturity already developed. That's the kind of person that's leadership material. So when I said time and needs free people, so that they are able to be responsible in leading a home church group. The bottom of 22 is for you to fill in at your own time. Take inventory. List the different kinds of groups that are active in your church. You won't take the time here. You can fill that up yourself. You will know what you have. 23. Most of all of our groups seem to fall on three different categories. They are, one, nurture groups. N-U-R-T-U-R-E, nurture groups. Two, task groups. And three, support groups. I already covered task and support groups. I'll just reiterate them for a second. Number two, task groups were like groups of ushers. You know, parking lot attendants, greeters, those are task groups. Three was support groups such as cancer recovery, you know, grief recovery, those things. Number one, I want to focus on nurture groups. These are the majority of home church groups in any church. In fact, most of you right here are probably heading a nurture group. And that's your, I don't mean to say ordinary as an ordinary, it's the regular type of home church group where you are sharing, receiving, praying for one another, meeting each other's needs, finding a hurt and healing it, finding a need and meeting it. Those are your nurture groups. So people get plugged in. That's what we mean by nurture groups. Discover the validity of nurture groups. That's what's going to cause the church to expand and explode. Two, make good use of task groups. Who do you think is going to sign up to be a parking lot attendant or an usher? Somebody who's got a servant heart. Tell you the truth, all my life I've never signed up in one of those groups. It's an area I need to grow in. If you were there last night, I think I confessed that to you. But those guys, they love to work. Just put them to work. Even if it means they've got to wear the same blue coat every Sunday morning to distinguish themselves as ushers, they're glad to do it, Matt. They're there, put in the water there, you know, get in the box of tissues when someone's crying, holding somebody when they're falling over. That's their, they love to serve. So make good use of task groups or they'll get bored. 3, build and multiply support groups. A wonderful way to reach the unchurched. I mentioned that, like if there's youth recovery, if there's substance abuse, drug and alcohol, tremendous way. In fact, in our home church, they started a SAVE program, Substance Abuse Victorious is what they call it. And they use the word substance to cover both drugs and alcohol and all of that. And it's amazing, the people that came from churches such as, you know, like Anglican churches even. I mean, you get people who are caught in one of these vices in any church. So, I mean, totally non-charismatic, but they came here because this church had that kind of group to offer. And of course, birds of a feather, and you get strong leaders, boom, they start coming to the church. Not that you want to get them to the Anglican church, you want to get them delivered, and then it doesn't hurt if they get spirit-filled, right? Page 24, open versus closed groups, and this is important. We need to be committed to open groups. When I say a closed group, I know of cases where there are groups, back in Pennsylvania, just an elite group. We are all successful businessmen. So just us 8 couples get together. It's exclusive. I'm not saying it's totally wrong. I would venture to boldly state, from having observed these groups, it's okay for a season. It will wear thin afterwards because it's a closed group. It gets old. It will become stale, stagnant, it will break up eventually. So what was the purpose? Just that they met their personal little needs for a season? And let's look at it this way. The regular nurture groups, which are the lifeblood of the church, the nurture groups that your home church leaders are, they have people who are financially needy, who are emotionally needy. These ones who've got it together in the business world, if they were part of a nurture group, distributed in the nurture groups, when there is a need, like the clothes washer, they could easily give $100 towards it. Now, being in their own little destiny group, they have no financial worries. It's like we're a separate little club. We're the Hayman Island Club. You know, and that's a closed group. It's not going to go. I mean, don't worry, if you've been to Hayman, praise God. But I'm talking about keep, we need to have a desire to keep our home church groups open groups. It's open for a drug addict to come in, for an alcoholic to come in, for a single mother to come in, for whatever it may be, you know, just divorce and remarry, whatever. You're welcome in this place. It's an open group. We love you. 14 love one another in the New Testament alone. Otherwise, it will stagnate. 7, 4 purposes of a small group. Number 1, evangelism. Two, or you could put it in the verb tense, to evangelize. 2, to disciple. That's probably one of the main things that goes on in nurture group. To disciple. 3, to shepherd. Shepherd, to care for throughout the week. That's from your perspective now as leaders. 4, sorry. You know, one of the things that Patsy and I did, maybe myself, has demanded much more often, we did so often as home church leaders. When people are part of our home church and they were moving house, they let us know. How many times I have personally, Patsy and I have all that, the guys in the group, I mean, you know, big, heavy stuff, a chest freezer, you know, furniture stuff. All they needed to do was get the truck, and we guys went in the Saturday afternoon and loaded the whole thing and unloaded it. One time I nearly strained my sternum, I just, no. I said, that's it, mate. They got to get a professional mover after this. But I was going up a steep flight of stairs from the basement taking a chest piece. But coming back to the point, service. I don't really have serious regrets. I'm glad they could serve better. They will never forget that people from that church were there to meet my needs. What do you see the purposes being of your small groups? That's something for you to answer. Page 25. Healthy small groups are ones that have evangelism as a continuing mission. You know, when you have a new person or an unsaved person coming to your group gets saved, it's incredible the amount of enthusiasm it generates, the amount of life it generates. And that's because it's an open group. If it was a closed group, that wouldn't happen at all. It wouldn't have a chance to happen. The three leadership positions in a home church group that are most important. Number one is yourself, the home church leader. Two is the assistant. You've got to have an assistant leader. Call him assistant, lay pastor in training. You've got to have somebody in that position. In fact, it doesn't hurt if you have two or three potential leaders in your group. I've had that many times, catching up. There are like three or four couples out of about, you know, 9 or 10 couples who can easily be home church leaders. But they're just not ready, or they're just too lazy. They need to be stirred up and challenged and quickened by the Holy Ghost. You've got to have an assistant, and three, a host or hostess. One of the most important parties in a home church system is your host home. Sometimes we personally suffered, were challenged, because there was nobody in the whole home church willing to open their home. And so we had to get a room in the church, an auxiliary, like Sunday school room in the church, and everybody had to come and meet in this very impersonal place. Let me tell you quick one reason why that was, so that some homes that nobody wanted to open their homes at some time. Because many parents, I can say this with authority because I've got a baby, and young children had not disciplined their children. They were concerned that those kids would come and wreck their home, so they would not open their home. And those people had a reason. I feel that, you know, everybody has a certain right to privacy. And we need to discipline our children. 6 months and 2 days, and my son, there's a ruler in his diaper bag. He got a whack on his thigh from daddy at 6 months and 2 days. Don't tell me I don't love my baby. I love him to death. But if he could learn the meaning of come, he would squiggle with delight when I put my hands on his cot and say come at 3 months old. He understood. Then I figured by 6 months old, he should be able to know the meaning of no. And now he knows. When I take the ruler out like this, he closes his eyes like this. He knows. We are bringing our children up to be absolute brats in this Western world. Believe me. You know what I'm talking about. You've seen children hiding in the mall from their parents. You've seen people with harnesses on their children. That's a disgrace if we call ourselves Christians. The Bible says, you spare the body, spoil the child. So we need not to be too harsh on some people who don't want to open their homes when they see brats, kids who are brats in the group. Now that I leave for the pastors and home church leaders to address that with the parents. It's never too late to change and to start that discipline. Sometime I'll develop a whole thing on charges. So, the host or the hostess is a very, very important person. Their hospitality is important. TLC groups, a home church group, a leader description. In other words, we're trying to describe you and your responsibilities here. Check out how many of these do you think you're faithful or good at. Make a home visitation and call the folk in your group. Now, I didn't say once every week, but at least once a fortnight, if there's 10 to 12 people, that's not too much to ask to make a phone call. Two, make sure that 5 or 6 member families which have been assigned are visited and cared for. Again, we didn't say how often you need to visit them. Once in a month and a half, maybe, to make a personal visitation. Sometimes you can hit 2 homes at one time. You don't have to go and have a meal. Just tell them you've got another appointment. You don't have to tell them all the details. I can only spend 15 minutes, I've got another appointment. You go boom, boom. But they're in the same geographical region, and you just, that touch means an incredible amount. They will be telling their neighbors. That was one of the home church leaders from my church who came to visit me. Let me tell you, I went to visit all the students in my school class 1 year. The parents almost fell off there. They couldn't believe it. So many of those parents are still supporting our ministry just because when their child was in 8th grade during the summer vacation, before they could start school, I went to every one of the 35 homes and visited them. They support our ministry just because I did that. How much more would your people be loyal to you if you took that time to visit them 10 minutes, just over a cuppa? You might end up having 3 cuppas that day, but it's worth it. 3, work with the host or hostess to make people comfortable. As a home church leader, don't think that your host or hostess should read your mind. You'll find out, we'll come across this. The best setting is the chairs in a circle. So nobody's looking at it. They look enough at the back of the neck of the person in church. But here you want to be facing one another. If your host or hostess is not aware of that, share that lovingly. Share with them how or when you'd like the snacks to be prepared. You know, things like that. Work in tandem. Talk and pray with the assistant leader and host or hostess before each week's meeting. That means you need to get there before the meeting is due to start. So you set the tone spiritually. Report to your district pastor, in your case, the 13 home church leaders, you'll have your senior pastor. Report to them, give them an accounting of what God is doing in your group. Don't wait for him to come and answer. So what happened last week? How did it go? You go yourself. And actually in that, let me quick say this. I'm not sure, Ken, if you'll have initiated like a written report sheet. Yeah, that is excellent. We did this week after week, year, month after month, year after year. It's a form that was actually in triplicate. You can make it in duplicate or however you want. It's a single form. But you put your name down there, the name of your group, list everybody that attended your group that time, that particular night or day, whenever you had your group. And then you list the special prayer needs. I mean, if somebody really had just, you know, met with an accident and needed extra prayer, somebody had a cancer thing. And I used to encourage people, please, when they come to prayer time, don't tell me about the bloke at work whose cousin was in hospital. It's you and I. This is our home church. I mean, there's a place for that. Maybe you put them in a general category. But if you want to take up the group time, let it be personal. We're here to meet each other's needs. But at the same time, it's not where you hang all your dirty linen on the line. That's where, as a home church, you need to keep it in order. So, six, initiate conversational prayer, and that's an excellent way. Some people, you ask them to pray, they never stop praying. Try conversational prayer, you know, just in one sentence, just thank the Lord for something he's done this week. Lead the Bible lesson discussion. You're really in charge as the home church leader. Be responsible for the report. Oh, I just covered that. Of the TLC meeting, of the home church meeting. Be responsible. 3:00. I'm trying to see where to catch a break. Yeah, just can we go to page 30? That shouldn't be much here to fill in. Page 26. Okay, your assistant leader. These are some of the responsibilities. You've got to have an assistant leader in your sights. Encourage him or her or them to make a home visit, a phone call, prospects. Make sure the families assigned have been visited and cared for. Let them open the meeting. As a home church leader, you don't have to do anything. Remember I said even maybe once or twice a month, you let them run the show. You're on the background. Sometimes it's been when I've visited a group as an overseer, when I got promoted, if you would, I saw somebody leading there, that looks not the leader. The home church leader just sitting there quietly. He's done a great job organizing the whole thing. Asked the assistant to do it, and the assistant's running the whole show beautifully. I give the home church leader higher marks than that. So he's multiplying his ministry right there without any insecurity effect. In fact, a visitor who first came that night may not have even known. He had thought the assistant was the leader that night. That's all right. There's no limit to what God can do through you if you don't care who gets the credit. Let them open the meeting on occasion, introduce the guests, icebreaker. I'm every home church leader here, I encourage you to do this. Start by, whether you do it before the opening prayer or after, that's up to you. But say, like, just here's some of the examples. Today was a good day because Philip finished the blank, each person. One time I had, the question was, well, what did you have for lunch today? Go around and everyone say what you had for lunch today. One lady said, I had 7 grain bread, and she listed all the grains. I was fascinated by that. Rye, wheat, this, that, then the other. But it's amazing, little things, icebreakers, they just do so much to look at the others. My favorite time of the day is one good thing that happened since last week, and you'd be amazed. Some people might say, I started tithing on the gross, the Lord brought me in $1,000. What did God do for you this week? What did God show you this week? One time they said, what's your favorite season of the year? This one bloke, believe it or not, said winter. I knew he couldn't be my friend. You know, winter, forget it, mate. We could have nothing in common here. He goes up to Canada when it gets cold, digs a hole in the ice, and goes ice fishing. Just they all bundle up. I thought, bless your heart, which is a nice Christian way of saying, you dum-dum. let them. So these things are pretty much standard. You can read them for yourself. Then the greeter or your host or your hostess. Let them know. Look at number 3. To set up the refreshments before the meeting time, so they don't have to jump up in the middle or halfway through while you're doing some sharing and disturb everybody else. The host can have extra Bibles and pencils for those who forgot. Suppose you had a visitor who doesn't even bring a Bible. Keep that ready. Show the people where to put their coats. Let them know that you want the chairs. Number four, arrange the chairs in cooperation with the leader in a circle. Keep a couple of extra chairs so you don't have to jump up in the middle of nowhere finding some. And I like the last part. Wait until the guests have left before cleaning up. You know, but then again, the guests ought to be sensitive enough to know it's time to go, especially if it's an evening service. That's one that, we'll come to that on the next page, actually. Why is it good to have these three different positions filled? What are the positions? Your position as home church leader, then the assistant, and then your host and hostess of the greeter. That's very important. The leader, so that yourself, we need that filled so that everything is run in proper order, it's administratively done in order, and spiritual needs are met. It's important to have an assistant position filled so that you are continually, that is continually, when that work grows up and starts a new group, you've got to have your eyes set on somebody else. You are continually raising and training up new leader group, new leader for group multiplication. Let me challenge you home church leaders with this point. Please don't throw in the towel of leaving your home church group and go to your pastor and his wife and say, well, now I think I've had enough of it. I've been quite disappointed. I'm going to throw in the towel. I think it's very unfair for us whom God has enabled and gifted, put us in that position of responsibility, to throw in the towel when we have not been raising up other leadership. At least if we raise up other leadership and then we feel pastor, we really feel God's moving us onto a different, you know, kind of service of the church. You know, maybe to be an usher or a parking lot attendant. Fine, here's the assistant leaders we have trained up. Now at least I give you some excuse. I'll tell you the home church leader, I like that.